compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
And we are back just like that. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. If you've been wondering about schooling your kids and where you're going to send them and what about the growing insanity in many of the public schools, do you have a Catholic school nearby, what about homeschooling, these are all things that many parents just like you are wondering about. And I draw your attention to an article in PJ Media. Parents are taking their kids out of traditional public schools in astounding numbers. Just a few details here, and Jim will get the article posted for you so you can check it out for yourself. A new report from the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools shows what a great advertisement American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten and her more radical members provided for school choice. After more than a year of school closures, Zoom classes, and battles over critical race theory, parents are increasingly taking their children out of public schools. The study looked at enrollment shifts between 2019 and 2020 and 2020 to 2021. Their analysis shows that 1.45 million children left public schools. Charter schools gained 237,000 students in the same period. The difference is made up by families choosing private schools or homeschooling. The researchers noted that public school enrollment declines began years ago in many cities and states. Some of the loss was due to demographic changes and population decline. However, the pandemic appears to have accelerated the switch to public school alternatives. Charter school enrollment increased in all but three of the 39 states that allowed them and that allow them rather and provided data. So here's some statistics from this analysis. Charter schools in the 42 states assessed gained nearly 240,000 students. It's a 7% increase. Public schools, including district-run schools, lost more than 1.4 million students. That's a 3.3% loss. There was a decrease in public school enrollment in every state in the country. Increases for charter schools ranged from 49 more students in Virginia to 35,751 additional students in Oklahoma. In terms of percentages, the increase in charter enrollment ranged from 0.19% in Louisiana to 78% increase in charter schools in Oklahoma. And let's see, let me just pull out a few other little details here. The researchers say the pandemic was the reason for many of the changes. Some parents they spoke with were looking for an educational setting that fits their family's pandemic experience. They give some examples of schools that meet those needs. The involvement of parents in their children's education may be the most positive outcome from the pandemic. Parents across the nation are demanding a say in the curriculum taught in their public schools. They are no longer content to leave it to the so-called experts who seem intent on creating activists instead of skilled workers, innovators, entrepreneurs, and leaders. We can see the results of education based on activist content, which has only gotten worse. Our college students are obediently following whatever the ridiculous university imposes, despite having, they give some a series of different examples. One last thing, in college enrollment for young men is declining at an alarming rate. While admissions are declining overall, men make up just 40% of college students now, and they account for 71% of that decline. The anti-male rhetoric that has dominated college campuses for years, culminating in the Dear Colleague letter that stripped young men of the due process rights when accused of sexual misconduct, has sent a clear message. Radical innovations in K-12 classes are required now to reverse the trends. America has a vested interest in ensuring that our children become productive, thinking members of society who can form families and stable communities. The pandemic has laid bare the public education system's complete failure to achieve these objectives for many parents. That may touch upon you and your kids. And if it does, or if you have a reason to want to share that with somebody, just go to the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show, or you can go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and grab that article. You'll see it right there in the embedded Twitter feed section. Let's go to Jordan now in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hello, Jordan.
Hi, Patrick. So you were talking in the article about sugars being either right or left-handed and not quite knowing what that means.
Yeah, I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a screw where it's threaded one way. You turn the screw clockwise to screw it in and counterclockwise to unscrew it.
Okay.
But that's just a convention. If the hole was threaded the other way, your screw wouldn't fit. And okay. if the threads on the screw and the hole were the other way, it would work, but it would be counterclockwise to screw it in. So chemicals kind of like that have physical arrangements, and they work differently depending on whether it's considered right or left-handed.
Okay.
And for example, proteins in your body are made out of amino acids, and almost all amino acids are left-handed. It's kind of a mystery why it's that way. People with mm-hmm. faith backgrounds point out that it's an indicator of intelligent design, but atheistic scientists claim there must be a natural cause for why all of it is left-handed and not right-handed.
There so must be a natural kind of cause because heaven forbid that God could be behind any of it. Now, that's very enlightening. I appreciate that. So that's a little, I must have been absent from school the day that that was taught in biology.
Yeah, it's it has to do with organic chemistry and biology more so.
Did I ever tell you my chemistry class story, Jordan?
No, I don't think I've heard that.
When I was 16, I was a poor student. I was a good student in the things that I liked when I was in high school. So I liked languages and history and literature and things like that. So I would get A's in those classes, no problem. But math and science I didn't like. So I didn't do well. I did poorly in those classes. So my dad, he's shrewd, when I got to be 16, and he knew, of course, that I wanted my driver's license, he said, yeah, you can get your driver's license, but you have to get an A in chemistry, not an A minus. You have to get an A in chemistry. And I mean, that would be like saying you have to fly to the moon, flap your arms and fly to the moon. Okay. So you know what happened? I got an A in chemistry. I worked so hard, and I really buckled down because I didn't really care about the chemistry, but I cared about getting my driver's license. So I was so jubilant when I came home with the report card and I showed my dad, hey, I got an A in chemistry. Can I go down and get my driver's license? He said, yeah, that's the deal. So I went down and got my driver's license, and within a week I had gotten a speeding ticket. So I was a bit unprepared for the freedom of a driver's license, but I learned my lesson very quickly. So that's my chemistry story.
Very nice.
Well, thank you, Jordan. Thanks for adding to my storehouse of knowledge. Now I know what right-handed and left-handed means when it comes to sugars. I appreciate it. Let's go to Homer now in Belmar, New Jersey. Hi, Homer.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A Catholic who recently died was cremated, once ashes scattered in a favorite place, and I understand the church frowns on that, but I don't know if the person knew it. The family's not religious. I'm not close to them, and they're very vulnerable now. I'm torn between wondering if I should let them know the church's teaching, which could upset them and possibly cause a rift within the family, or just mind my business as my wife is advising me.
Well, why would it cause a rift? I mean, if you just simply let them know, hey, the Catholic Church says no to scattering ashes, you need to have the ashes put, for example, in an urn in a cemetery. A columbarium is one of the words that's used for a place where you can put urns. Why would that cause a rift?
Well, because the children know what the wishes were. Mm-hmm. And if the person who's handling it decides not to go with those wishes, that could cause a conflict within the rest of the siblings.
Well, I understand. So that makes sense.
I'm not close to the family at all,
Is there a way that you could communicate that information to one of the people who might be sympathetic and then just let it go from there and not really worry about it, but let them handle it internally?
Yeah, I wouldn't know if, who would be sympathetic. The only thing I could do would be to send an anonymous letter, but I feel that would be kind of cowardly.
It also might be upsetting to them as well.
Yeah, that's and like I said, I don't know how anybody would take it. They're not at all religious.
But are they Catholic? Yeah.
I don't know. I know the deceased was, but whether or not they knew, whether or not the church is teaching on that, I just don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a pickle that you're in right now. It's hard for me to give you advice because some of these details are somewhat tenuous. I guess my advice would be this. If you think there's a reasonable chance that somebody in the family would be receptive to your sharing that information, might be a good idea to do that. If the family is not likely to care one way or the other because they're not Catholic, then I don't know what the upside is to do that.
I just don't know myself. I don't know. My wife is telling me that they're not, none of them believe in the church at all or the church's teachings. She feels strongly I should not say something, but kind of conscience-wise, I don't know.
Well, one thing is for sure that people who are not Catholic are not governed by the Catholic Church's laws on this issue. And this is a legal issue. It's not a doctrinal issue. It's not as though if they scatter his ashes, then suddenly now he's going to go to hell. I mean, it has no effect on the person who has died one way or the other. So whether the ashes are scattered or interred, he's going to either be going to heaven or going to hell regardless. So the ashes doesn't affect him. And if they're not Catholic, it doesn't really affect them either, because this law of the church applies to Catholics, not to non-Catholics. The church has no jurisdiction in this case over them. So I think I kind of side with your wife on this one. I think it probably, there's no real upside to you that I can see anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm leaning at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate your, input on that.
Sure, Homer. Thank you. And may that person rest in peace, I pray. Let me read to you briefly what the Catholic Bishop's website says on this topic. So it says, the cremated remains of a body should be treated with the same respect given to the human body from which they come. This includes the use of a worthy vessel to contain the ashes, the manner in which they are carried, and the care and attention to appropriate placement and transport in the final disposition. The cremated remains should be buried in a grave or entombed in a mausoleum or a columbarium. The practice of scattering cremated remains on the sea, from the air, or on the ground, or keeping cremated remains in the home of a relative or a friend of the deceased are not the reverent disposition that the church requires. So there you have it in a nutshell. Essentially, the church says, don't do that. Here's the proper way to put to rest the remains of the person who died, and Catholics are obliged to follow that. Now, non-Catholics are not obliged to follow that, which was the complicating factor in this case. But just be aware, if you are planning cremation, be aware that your kids should not have your cremated ashes on the mantelpiece in the living room, or sitting on the grand piano in the living room, or you should not have your ashes scattered anywhere. Do what the church says, have the ashes in an urn, and that way, think about it. If you have your ashes scattered on the ocean or anyplace else, there's no way for anybody to come and pay the respects where your body would otherwise be after you've died. And when you have your body either interred in the ground in burial, or as this document says, in a mausoleum or a columbarium, then your friends and your family can come to a place where there is a tangible reminder of you, because your remains are there, in a dignified setting, and they can pray for you. Doesn't mean they can't pray for you otherwise, but because we are creatures of flesh as well as spirit, the location of things, to be able to see things and touch things, this is very important to us, and it also assists us when it comes to praying for people. So just a reminder, the church does not permit the scattering of ashes, and we'll get a link to this page on the bishop's website, so that you can see this for yourself, or maybe share it with some friends. Thanks for the call, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Ann now in Chicago. Hi, Ann. Welcome.
Hello, and how are you doing today?
I am doing well, thank you. I hope you are too.
Excellent. Oh, well, thank you. I have to tell you, I didn't sleep well last night, and I figured I'd call you and see if you could help me out. So
sure. You
let off a little bit ago about schooling, and I definitely fell into that category. I live in Illinois, and our laws here were quickly changing as far as what was going to be appropriate to be taught in schools. Mm-hmm. So I took my kids out. I put them in Catholic school. And this year, my daughter is a freshman at a fairly, I would say, a really good Catholic high school in Wheaton. And it's come to my attention now that there is, it started the school year off with a letter saying, we are Catholic, we are going to stand behind being Catholic, we will not be referring to children by what gender they choose, and this is the reason why. Then there was a lot of rioting. Then I find out yesterday
there was a lot of, there was a lot of rioting?
Yes.
What do you mean rioting? Who was rioting?
Well, it was I thought it was the community. And I thought because the community is coming out saying, you know, well, in the public school, the children can pick their gender. In the public school, the children can do this. And how dare you guys, you know, not follow what everybody else is doing.
Who is saying that? I'm lost, Anne. I'm lost. Who's rioting and who's saying what you just said? I don't follow this thread.
Okay. So I think here, just so as a new parent to a new school, all I got was, it might have been an email saying, just want to let you know there might be some protesters, there might be some activity going on at school because people are questioning our choices on, you know, that you were born a girl and born a boy and we're going to identify you as being such.
So wait, you mean like the kind citizens of the neighborhood where the school is located, these people are out in the streets rioting because the Catholic school is not following the public school gender ideology? Is that what you mean?
That's exactly what I mean. The police had to be called in. Apparently, there were also a lot of threats made to the school. And a lot of this was hush-hush. So now I found out that it's homecoming weekend and they are planning again to have another protest at the school. And so I told my daughter, I said, well, I just want to make you aware that this could occur again. And she said, oh, Mom, I'm just so tired of it. I'm so tired of all of it. And I said, okay, well, what's going on? And she said, well, in the beginning of the school year, they had us all sit down and write down what gender we want to be referred to as. And she said, I just don't understand. I thought this is why you put us in a Catholic school, so we wouldn't have to deal with this.
All right.
And then she said...
So, Anne, if I may interrupt here, I'm not sure what your question is. I'm following the story, but I don't know where we're going with it.
Okay, I guess my question is that what do I do as a parent? Her religion teacher, along with a lot of other teachers there, are wearing T-shirts that say LGBTQ+ on them.
Take her out of the school.
It's making me.
Let's take her out.
Okay. And where do I put her? Is this where the Catholic schools are going? Is this where the high schools are going? Do I?
It may be, and I don't know the circumstances. You know where you live. It may be that there's a really sound and intact Catholic school somewhere in the area. That would be an option. Homeschooling is always an option. And I don't know what your circumstances are, whether you work outside the home or not, but I mean, that would be another very important option to consider carefully because first of all, you're anxious and worried about this. Your daughter is beside herself. The Catholic school that you sent her to, hoping that they would give her a Catholic education, they have betrayed you and they're taking your money to add insult to injury. So you're spending buku bucks to send your daughter to a school that's turning in this direction now. So if you can't trust the public schools to do right by your daughter, and apparently you can't, and now it looks like you can't trust that Catholic school to do right by your daughter, well, then if you can't find another good Catholic school, then I would homeschool her. I think that's the only other option the only other option beside that is to just throw her to the wolves. And she winds up being browbeaten and indoctrinated for however long she's got left in high school. And I wouldn't want that for your daughter. I wouldn't want that for my daughter. So
no, absolutely, you know, not. I just didn't know if it's worth trying to pursue other high schools. I know the other high school that's close by, because some of the moms in my group had expressed that they're going through the same kind of troubles at that school. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, is this just kind of like everywhere?
Well, that I don't know. I mean, I'm not on the ground there where you are, so I couldn't begin to know. But let's assume that it isn't, and that there are some good, faithful Catholic schools that you could choose from. That would be certainly an option that I would look into. Now, if you don't find anything, and if it really is a wasteland, and you know, who knows? I don't know. But if it is the worst case scenario, then my advice would be, if you need to make a few sacrifices, it is far more worth it in the long run to make a few sacrifices and maybe juggle your calendar, your schedule rather, and homeschool your daughter. And then she doesn't come out of high school as a high-functioning atheist, LGBTQ worker bee, as so many of these kids are. Then, you know, it's win-win. Your conscience is clear and your daughter is far more intact than she would have been. And you're also not spending all that money every month.
Okay. Yeah. I just, because I figure you get a lot of calls. And so that nobody else has called and complained about that the Catholic schools where they're sending their children are pushing this agenda.
Yes. And if they're, I don't doubt it. So I'm just saying, in a case where the Catholic high school has betrayed its mission and is carrying water for the LGBTQ++ movement and any other harmful ideologies that they may be throwing in there, I would just simply pull the plug. You don't deserve my daughter's presence there. You don't deserve our money. We will take her elsewhere. And maybe write a letter,
okay,
you know, to the principal or headmaster or whatever, and just say, here's why you are not going to get our tuition money, because you have failed in your mission. You have betrayed your mission. And we're not going to put up with that. So goodbye.
Okay. Yeah, I had asked other parents and they said that she's extremely liberal and they were not surprised. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I wish I had known this before I had enrolled her.
Well, you know, the nice thing is it's still early enough in the year where if you decided to homeschool her, she could get up to speed very quickly with Seton Home Study, for example. They're, you know, an excellent resource that you can take a look at. There are a number of them. And if you get in touch with us, go to relevantradio.com. You can find out some of these resources that we have for you with those who are friends of the network. But I would start there. And I'm sure that your daughter's going to thank you for it after the fact. And your conscience is going to be clear because you'll know that you acted, even if it meant there would be some suffering, you acted to help your daughter. Okay, Ann?
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm just offering you my advice. That's what I would recommend.
Yes, and that's what I was looking for. And I was looking for, like, is this a new trend that's happening? Is, like, I don't even know how to do the interview process because I thought that I did that with this school and they seemed like they were right on board. And I talked to the religion group and yeah. I find out that it's actually the religion teachers who are pushing this. And it's
yeah. The inmates are running the asylum now. We live in clown world run by children. And the best thing to do is move your daughter to a safe place. God bless you, Ann. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
A friend of mine who's listening to the program, he texted me a little addendum, which I think is excellent, for the lady that I was just talking to, whose daughter is at a Catholic high school and being fed a steady diet now of LGBTQ++ and whatever else goes along with that ideology. The mom thought she was putting her daughter into a good school because the public schools were collapsing all around her, only to find that much of the same thing is now happening at that school. So anyway, my friend sent me a note and he says, I think that mom should also write to the bishop. And I concur. I mean, if this Catholic school is going rogue, then the bishop should hear about it. So yeah, thanks for sending that in to me. And also on Twitter, R. Ram, he says, hello, Patrick. A woman called you with concern that her husband refuses to go to confession with her. He states that he has nothing to confess about. You once mentioned that in Mass, as we as a group pray for forgiveness, venial sins are erased. And that is true. You are correct in that, sir. But the way I understood her, and I think what she herself feels, is that if he's just not going to confession for great lengths of time, and he's kind of lukewarm, or maybe even very lukewarm in his faith, chances are, all other things being equal, he's probably committing some mortal sins, and his wife would be in a good position, I suppose, to moderate that sort of thing, and she feels as though maybe there's more there than he's willing to admit. And, you know, far be it from me to say otherwise, but I think her instincts, her judgments are probably accurate. So even though you are correct, and I did say that during the penitential rite at Mass, all your venial sins are erased. Now, if you have any mortal sins, then nothing is erased. You still have to go to confession before you go to receive Holy Communion in the case of mortal sin. And we'll find, I guess we'll never know, and it's not meant for us to know, but I'm glad that you thought about that aspect. Let's go to Leah now, listening in St. Louis. Good morning, Leah. Welcome.
Hi. I had a question for you on your thoughts on, like, the best way to approach or reach your family who are just more, like, lukewarm Catholics. Like, don't go to confession, don't see the need, but go to church every Sunday and, like, maybe live with their significant other before marriage, but getting married in the church. So kind of picking and choosing what they believe in the church, but not totally rejecting it.
So they're Catholic when it's convenient, and when it's not convenient, they're not really Catholic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what I did once, Leah. I did something, I think something that many people might consider to be, I don't know how to describe it, maybe a little bit more than what they would expect, but here's what I did. I had a sister, I mean, I still have a sister, but my sister was heading down a path of, let's just say, hedonism and worldliness. And this is many, many, many years ago. And I felt like I needed to do something to encourage her not to go down that path. But I didn't feel as though she would really be willing to listen to me. It might make her angry and so on. So I got this bright idea. There is a book called Hell. It's called The Dogma of Hell. It has a garish, bright red cover. You can't miss it. And I wanted to give her a copy of this book because my thought process was, well, you know, listen, if you're on your way to hell, you might as well at least know what it's going to be like when you get there. But I would never say that to her. And I didn't know how to tell her, you know, you're on your way to hell. I didn't want to be that guy, you know. So rather than give her a copy of this book, what I did, and those who are listeners to this program, they know this story because they've heard me tell it before. But what I did was one Christmas, I bought like 15 copies of this book, and I gave everybody in the family a copy of the book. You know, so all my brothers and sisters, my mom and dad, everybody got a copy of this book. So when we were over at my mom and dad's house, so Nancy and I brought our kids Christmas morning after we opened our presents, we came over to my parents' house. And so my parents and Nancy and me and our kids and my siblings, we opened presents. So I said, hey, everybody, could you open the present for me all at the same time? Okay, sure. So they all get the present from me, which is this book called The Dogma of Hell. And they all open it up. And some people laughed and some people looked at me funny like, well, Merry Christmas. Here's a book on hell. Okay. So anyway, so they all got the book and it was really intended just for her. So months later, she told me, we were having a candid conversation. She told me, she said, you know, I knew in the moment when I unwrapped that book that it was really me you were giving it to. Even though you gave it to everyone else, you were hiding the fact that you were really giving it to me. And she said, it really made me angry at first. But she said, I'm going to read this book. So she said she started reading it. And it describes how you go to hell, what you do and don't do that will send you to hell. And she saw herself in many of those things, and she got scared straight. She had a profound kind of turning of the corner, getting back to the sacraments and kind of turning her back on this thing that she was going down, you know, this route she was going down. And she said, I just want to thank you. She said, because it really did get my attention, even though I was irritated at first, it really helped me to have that conversion. So ever since then, Leah, I have recommended that people try that. It worked for me. And I've heard other people who have had the same experience. I'll give you one quick example. There was a young woman who called the program maybe a year ago or so, and she got kind of emotional when she called and she said, you know, I just recently started listening to your program. She said, my brother was telling me all the time, listen to the Patrick Madrid Show. And she didn't want to listen because, as she said, she was living a life of, let's just say, hedonism. And she was enjoying herself. And the last thing she really wanted to listen to was God stuff. So her brother's telling her, listen to the show. So finally she says, like, to get him off her back, she's like, okay, I'll listen to the show. So she turns it on. And what am I talking about? That book on hell. And I guess I told that story about my sister. And it just so happens that when she turned on the show for the very first time, that's what I was talking about. So she said, and this is where she started to cry. She said that she ordered that book right then and there. She ordered the book. It came the next day. She sat down. She read the book. She had a profound change of heart. She went back to confession. She stopped all the other stuff she was doing, and she called to say thank you. So I know that sometimes, maybe not every time, but sometimes doing that, giving that book to somebody, can really get their attention. So what have you got to lose? That might be just the thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing with my family is it's everybody probably needs a book. Maybe not everybody, but...
Well, you might need 20 copies. I only needed 15 copies. I'll tell you how you can take a look at it. Go to, and I have no, there's no benefit to me in this. I don't make any money from it. I'm not selling it or anything. But if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, there you will see some links. And one of the links is the book on hell. And you'll be able to see it. And it's not as though if you order it there that I get a cut of it. It's nothing like, it's just a link to where you can order it. And I don't benefit in any way. But then at least you'll be able to see what I'm talking about.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you.
Oh, yeah. And Jim, you just reminded me, Jim. Thank you for that. There's also that talk by Father Bill Casey called Lukewarm Catholicism. And it's an attention getter. And you can get it when you text my name, Patrick Madrid, all one word, to 84576. And it's just a list you can sign up on. You can opt out at any time. There's nothing to it other than free stuff and maybe the occasional announcement that I put up there for people, because I like to bring resources to people, and that's one way to do it easily. So if you decide to sign up, then you just scroll down until you find the talk Lukewarm Catholicism by Father Bill Casey. It's a digital download. You just click it and it'll download it, and it's free.
Okay, yeah, I'm definitely going to try that. I think a talk might be a nice easing into thing than a whole book.
Yeah. Okay, well, fair enough. And by the way, it's a very small book. It's not a big ponderous tome. It's very manageable. Leah, I hope that's helpful to you. I really do. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Margaret now in California. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Friday blessings to you, Patrick. How are you?
Thank you. I am well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, good. Okay, so I wanted to ask about offering it up. That's something that my dad used to say all the time.
Right.
And I wanted to ask how best I can explain that to my kids. I have two that are in college, and we have a pretty good prayer life. And I have a son who's in junior high who loves to pray. We pray our family rosary, and then at night he prays an extra decade just from him. Right. So they seem to have a really good grasp on their faith and everything. So I just wanted to find a good way to explain what it means to offer up our suffering. Like, why is it important, and what does that look like? How do we do that?
Okay. Well, it's as simple as just saying in the moment, whatever you're going through, it's as simple as saying, Lord, I'm in pain here, or I'm I'm scared or I'm irritated or I'm suffering in some way, and I want to offer this suffering to you for my own purification, and you can also offer this up for the souls in purgatory. And God will apply that to them. So the merit involved here is that you are taking this, whatever it is that's causing you suffering, and you're offering it up to the Lord. And it's really, it's just that simple. It doesn't require anything elaborate or intricate. Some passages to think about. Hebrews 13, verse 15 says, "Through him, then, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of lips that acknowledge his name." So in your suffering, you can say, "Lord, I offer you these sufferings to praise you and glorify you. And you're permitting these sufferings to come my way, and it's for my benefit. And so I praise and thank you for the suffering that you're allowing me to experience, because you suffered for me." So that's another way. Romans chapter 12, verse 1 says, "I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship." So in your bodily aches and pains, you know, you're getting your tooth drilled at the dentist. That's not fun. You've got, you know, a headache or whatever it may be. And you present your body with all of its sufferings and deficiencies. We all have them. And it says here, present it as a living sacrifice to God. And that's another dimension of this as well.
Okay, so the suffering that we go to when we offer it up is for our own purification and not for, say, others. Like maybe, like for instance, in my situation, my husband suddenly passed away in a heart attack in his sleep. No time for goodbyes or anything. And my youngest was 9 at the time, so it's been very, difficult to say the least. And so in our suffering and our grief, you know, I don't want the suffering to go wasted. Right. So is that something that we offer up for our own purification, or can we take our suffering to offer it up for someone else that's suffering?
Both. Yeah, it's both and. You can do either or both and. Let me tell you what St. Paul says about this. St. Paul says in Colossians 1, beginning of verse 24, he says, "Now I rejoice in my sufferings for your sake, and in my flesh I complete what is lacking in Christ's afflictions for the sake of his body, that is the church." Now, he doesn't mean by that that Jesus didn't suffer enough on the cross. What he means is that the body of Christ, of which we are all members, that we, in our sufferings, we are kind of completing the suffering of Christ in and through the body. So he died on the cross, he suffered on the cross for our salvation, but we have a role to play by being members of his body. So you see there in verse 24 where he says, "I rejoice in my sufferings for your sake." So he was offering the Lord his sufferings on behalf of his fellow Christians, which I think is the answer to your question.
Yes. Okay. That's very, very helpful.
Good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Great to talk to you. And I hope we talk again. Thank you. Looks like we have
thank
to take
you.
A quick time out, and then we'll be back with the rest of our program right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
All right, we are back. Thanks for listening. We'll go to Francis in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Hi, Francis.
Ah, good morning.
Hi there.
I have two questions for you, Patrick. They're interrelated.
Okay.
The one is, based on the fact that we're forced to take communion by the hand now in church, I'm curious as to how Jesus instituted it at the first communion to the apostles. Did he take a piece of the bread and then go around and give each apostle their piece, or did he pass it around? Is there anything down through history that verifies it? And the other question then is, who created the sequence of the Mass?
The sequence of the Mass? You mean like the order of prayers? And
exactly, yeah.
Okay. So let's take the first one. Let's take them in order. So we have a biblical account of the Last Supper. Now, it doesn't specifically say that Jesus... Here's what it does say. So we're in Matthew chapter 26, verse 26. Now, as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, Take, eat, this is my body. And he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. So there we have what we know about the Last Supper, but it's sufficiently ambiguous that it could mean that Jesus handed the piece of bread to, let's say, the apostle at his right hand, and then that apostle continued handing it to the next one, to the next one. That's one way it could have been done. Another possibility is that Jesus broke the bread into 12 pieces and himself handed it to each of the apostles. That's another possibility, but we don't know because it doesn't tell us. And we can only conjecture that it would be one or the other. Now, one thing to note, and that is some people say, well, you know, why shouldn't people receive communion in the hand when that discussion comes up? And they reference the apostles at the Last Supper. Well, the difference is the apostles at the Last Supper were being ordained to the priesthood as the first Mass was being celebrated. So it is proper to the priest to hold the Holy Eucharist. And so it's not transferable because the apostles were handed the Eucharist in their hands. It's not transferable in a necessary sense that lay people would do that. That's kind of a tangent. Now, as to the second question, the order of the Mass is, there are several good books that will walk you through this. One is called The Mass of the Early Christians by Mike Aquilina. Another one is How Christ Celebrated the First Mass. And I'm blanking on the author of that book. That's an older book. I believe it's published by St. Benedict Press, How Christ Celebrated the First Mass. And then if you want something scholarly that will give you a great deal of historical data on this issue, there's a two-volume work by Joseph Jungmann, J-U-N-G-M-A-N-N, and the work is entitled The Mass of the Roman Rite. And in that book, what Jungmann does is delineate the history of the form of the Mass in the Roman Rite. So when did these... like you called it, the sequence of the Mass, when did these different parts of the Mass begin to emerge? And the answer is very, very early. We can see as early as, say, the Didache, which is an early second century Syrian document, is kind of a manual of Christian practice, including how they celebrated Mass. And you'll see very clearly there some key elements of the Mass that you recognize today, present even in those earliest times. So those are three or four resources I think that will help. And I hope that helps. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to James in Las Vegas. Hi, James.
Hi, good morning. So I had a comment, a different way maybe to look at offering up suffering.
Okay.
So many years I understood offering up suffering the way I think most people do who are raised Catholic, and it was a bit confusing to me. I mean, why would Christ want suffering? That doesn't seem like a great gift to give him. And you've done a good job explaining that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, James. Go ahead.
And you've done a good job explaining that, and others have as well. But I came to realize about 8 years ago, my son died. And so I carried this cross. And the cross was mine. I kept it, and I polished it. and it became part of who I was and how I was defined. And I was alone for a couple of weeks on an occasion, and I started exploring offering up my suffering one more time. Mm-hmm. And I realized that this suffering that I was going through, I was keeping selfishly to myself and to the detriment of others also. And so when I offered it to Christ, I was released from the suffering and reclaimed my joy, and it changed me, and it gave me a different outlook on offering up suffering. So for those who've suffered immensely, maybe looking at it that way, I know it's hard to believe you wouldn't want to get rid of your suffering, but after years pass, it becomes kind of part of who you are. And it does get hard to offer up. But it is wonderful when you do. Just a thought.
That's a beautiful story, James. And I shudder at the thought of ever having to go through what you went through and losing a child. So, you know, I completely understand what you're saying. And so, if I can repeat back to you what I'm hearing you say is that when you offered that to the Lord, that the am I saying it the right way, that much of the pain went away? And it doesn't mean that you still didn't miss your son and love him and were sad that he died, but you no longer were in that state of suffering and in that kind of ongoing anguish because God released you from that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it enabled me to see life and to see him and his life in a completely new way. Just because I was not selfishly holding on to that suffering that helped define me. I mean, you're that person who nobody wants to be, and eventually you start to own that, and it changes you and your outlook, and, you know, it makes it hard to be a joyful person. And it also makes it hard to look at your loved one in a way that's not defined by how you lost them, as opposed to how they live their life and the joy that you felt when they were near you. And so there's just a whole myriad of relief that happens when you give that over to the Lord, and he's there to take that from you, and he wants to take that from you. And but you know, you wouldn't think you would cling to these things, but we cling to our sin as well, and you wouldn't think we would cling to that. So,
well, I get what you're saying, James. I really do. And thank you. I don't know what I can add to what you just said, but thank you very much. Romans 5, verses 3 through 5 says that more than that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. Let's go now to Martha in Ontario, California. Hi, Martha.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. How
good
are
morning.
You?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks.
So my question is, it's regarding Halloween is coming up, and I usually decorate the house, and I was watching a segment on TV that was saying that, you know, decorating or participating in any type of Halloween activities is a sin. So I guess I kind of just...
Who said that?
My question is, I was flipping through the channels, and it wasn't a Catholic segment. I think it was on the...
I would ignore that.
PBB. Okay.
I would ignore that.
Yeah. Only because my children are asking me, like, when are we going to buy the decorations? I guess, what's appropriate and what's not appropriate when it comes to decorating is my question.
Well, yeah, so for Halloween, there's nothing whatsoever wrong with decorating with pumpkins. It's, you know, it's autumn, and pumpkins are in season, and it's associated with autumn in any case. Now, if you want to make a jack-o'-lantern, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just a cultural phenomenon. Now, people, if they take it in the direction of like witchcraft or something devilish or something, yeah, I would say no, I wouldn't do that at all. But if you just want to decorate your home with these beautiful, I was going to call it a plant, these beautiful fruits, whatever they are, gourds, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. These are made by God. And so if they beautify your home, okay, so be it. Yeah.
Okay. That was my question. Yeah. Because I felt bad. You know, they're still in elementary, so they look forward to it. They don't know. They think yeah. it's going around. And I've tried to explain, you know,
there's nothing wrong with Halloween.
All Saints Day.
I'm out of time, Martha. I forgive my interruption. I'm out of time. The music's going to start playing. There's nothing wrong with a benign form of Halloween. Now, obviously, you don't want to go with witchcraft and devilry or any of those things, and I'm not in any way endorsing that. But to decorate your home with pumpkins and that sort of thing, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Thanks, Martha. God bless you, everybody. I will be back with you again very soon, and I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.